We're going to continue this evening the series we started a few weeks ago in the book of Exodus. We're going to be going to chapter 2. I've enjoyed studying some in Exodus. It is a book full of some pretty interesting and powerful stories. It is very much a story being told to you. You know, some books of the Bible are not quite like that, like Romans we talked about this morning in our class. That's more of a letter of communication. But man, Exodus is just telling one really powerful story from beginning to its end within this book. And we're going to get into the real beginning of that story in chapter 2 tonight. I was thinking about chapter 2 of Exodus, and I thought about the question, what makes a hero or a leader? What makes someone that's going to be a good leader among men? Or in the Bible, maybe a more important question, what makes someone a good prophet? What makes someone a good candidate for God to choose them to do this kind of job? We see a lot of backgrounds through history and fiction for great figures. I thought, you know, what are some famous backgrounds for great figures? And I immediately thought of two obvious ones. One is Batman and the other is Superman. Young Bruce Wayne took up the mantle of Batman to fight crime after seeing his parents, two rich but generous citizens, gunned down in an alley. It profoundly impacted his sense of justice to see that happen to them and his desire to save others. Likewise, Superman is a very different kind of hero. He's from another world in his story. He's stronger than any of the people around him, but he's raised by kind and humble people. And he decides to use that great strength to help others. Sometimes I think about the stories of underdogs, you know, real figures in our world that came up from great adversity to do great things. Young Michael Jordan, how he struggled with basketball initially in high school, but stuck with it and became such an amazing, influential player. Or Alexander Hamilton, who grew up as a poor orphan, but became one of the most influential figures in our country's founding. I think about men in the Bible, like Paul, who began as a Pharisee, but becomes an apostle. Or Matthew, who was a tax collector, but becomes a disciple. Everyone starts somewhere. And knowing where people started can help us to better understand how they grow to be the person that they are. What motivations drove them forward. This is a key part of our study tonight in the second chapter of Exodus, because we're going to be looking, of course, at the life of Moses. He's a pretty important figure in Exodus. How did Moses come to be the greatest prophet and leader in Israel's history? Why did God choose this guy? And what can we learn about his life before he became God's prophet? Well, Moses' story begins in Exodus chapter 2, and we'll read verses 1 through 10 to kind of start out. Starting in Exodus 2, verse 1, it says, "Now a man from the house of Levi went and took as his wife a Levite woman. The woman conceived and bore a son, and when she saw that he was a fine child, she hid him 3 months. When she could hide him no longer, she took for him a basket made of bulrushes and daubed it with bitumen and pitch. She put the child in it and placed it among the reeds by the riverbank. His sister stood at a distance to know what would be done to him. Now the daughter of Pharaoh came down to bathe at the river while her young women walked beside the river, and she saw the basket among the reeds and sent her servant woman, and she took it. When she opened it, she saw the child, and behold, the baby was crying. She took pity on him and said, 'This is one of the Hebrews' children.' Then his sister said to Pharaoh's daughter, 'Shall I go and call a nurse from the Hebrew women to nurse this child for you?' Pharaoh's daughter said to her, 'Go.' So the girl went and called the child's mother. And Pharaoh's daughter said to her, 'Take this child away, nurse him for me, and I'll give you your wages.' So the woman took the child and nursed him. And when the child grew older, she brought him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. She named him Moses because she said, 'I have drawn him out of the water.'" Moses' story begins in a very unusual fashion. He's a descendant of the tribe of Levi, which isn't actually that important yet, but is going to be pretty important for the future of his ministry, as the tribe of Levi becomes pretty important to the story of Exodus. But here he's born, and his mother tries for 3 months to hide his identity. He is this healthy baby, and she knows that the Egyptians are after all the male Hebrew babies. Finally, she runs out of options, and she puts Moses in a basket. It's interesting that just like the first chapter of Exodus, God's not really mentioned in this story. We don't know if Moses' mother knew much about the old Israelite faith. We don't really know what a lot of the Israelites know about God at this point. But it seems, though, that the providence of God is with Moses in this story. His mother leaves him in this basket, which I love. The word here used for basket is actually the same word in Hebrew that's used to describe the ark that Noah has. It's that same word. It's a little ark. And just like the ark kept Noah safe through that whole thing, this small ark, God keeps Moses safe in it through this. But he floats down the Nile, and of all the things that could have happened, God allows him to be found by the daughter of the Pharaoh who's committing these evil acts in Exodus. And she takes pity on him. Not only does she save Moses, but Moses' sister's quick thinking allows Moses' own biological mother to serve as his nurse and caretaker as a child. He becomes the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He receives the name Moses, which essentially means drawn up, like he was drawn up out of the water. You know, we talked a lot in the last year about the fact that God is in control of this world. I had somebody tell me that this morning after service. They said, you know, the more and more they wake up every morning and they believe that. This year's been a big lesson in that. And I love this story of Moses' birth and his childhood because, to me, that's really what it's about. I'm sure that when Moses' mother put him in that basket, she never expected to see him again. It had to be such a hard thing to do. And yet, here, in the midst of all this, God turns these tears into a moment of great blessing for her family. He preserves Moses, and it really seems that this background of growing up in Pharaoh's household is part of the reason that Moses then later serves as such an important person in God's mission to save the Israelites. He's got connections. He knows how to work in Pharaoh's court. He knows how to get to him, to speak to him later in life. God seems to have had a plan in all this. Psalm 94:14 tells us, "The Lord will not reject his people, nor will he forsake his inheritance." I've often heard people talk about our world, about our country, about how things are just so bad and there's hardly any hope. And I understand that feeling. It gets hard sometimes to look around and see things the way that they are. Last year certainly felt hopeless at points. But stories like the story of Moses remind me that God's not blind to the difficulties of this world, to the problems going on around us. God wasn't blind to the struggles of the Israelites. He wasn't blind to the injustice that the Egyptians were committing. And here, in this one minor, small act, God saves one child, blesses two families, and later this one small child will grow into the leader that leads all of Israel and Egypt to change. This whole problem that all the Israelites are working with when Moses is born, it's this one small moment that leads to that problem being changed. They don't know that. Moses' mother doesn't know that. But yet it appears there's hope out there she doesn't know about at the time. We don't really know what seemingly small act might lead to powerful and good change in our world. But we know, looking at history, that God has often allowed big things to happen. Big, good changes in this world. Injustice doesn't tend to reign forever. Evil empires, evil regimes, evil people fall and fail. And I read the story of Moses, and I'm reminded that sometimes God can do big things with what seems like small action. That he only tolerates injustice for so long. And that is, somebody told me this morning, God is in control. And if God's in control, that should encourage me. It should give me something to hold on to in the difficult times. Let's read on a little further, finish up Moses' story here in chapter 2. It says in verse 11, "One day when Moses had grown up, he went out to his people and he looked on their burdens, and he saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his people. He looked this way and he looked that way, and seeing no one, he struck down the Egyptian and hit him in the sand. And when he went out the next day, behold, two Hebrews were struggling together. And he said to the man in the wrong, 'Why do you strike your companion?' And he answered, 'Who made you a prince and a judge over us? Do you mean to kill me as you killed the Egyptian?' And then Moses was afraid, and he thought, 'Surely this thing is known.' When Pharaoh had heard of it, he sought to kill Moses. But Moses fled from Pharaoh and stayed in the land of Midian. He sat down by a well. Now the priest of Midian had seven daughters, and they came and drew water and filled the troughs of the water to water their father's flock. But the shepherds came and drove them away, but Moses stood up and saved them and watered their flock. And when they came home to their father, Reuel, he said, 'How is it that you have come home so soon today?' They said, 'An Egyptian delivered us out of the hand of the shepherds and even drew water for us and watered the flock.' He said to his daughters, 'Then where is he? Why have you left the man? Call him that he may eat bread.' Moses was content to dwell with the man, and he gave Moses his daughter Zipporah. She gave birth to a son who he called his name Gershom, for he said, 'I have been a sojourner in a foreign land.' And during those many days, the king of Egypt died. The people of Israel groaned because of their slavery and cried out for help. And their cry for rescue from slavery came up to God. God heard their groaning. God remembered his covenant with Abraham and Isaac and Jacob." And I love verse 25 of this chapter. It's such an interesting way to end this part of this story. It just said God saw the people of Israel. God knew. That's where it is. God is aware. God is not ignorant of their situation. He isn't ignorant of what is going on with Moses. And he is orchestrating all this together to do something about it. That's how chapter 2 of Exodus ends. You know, we've seen these circumstances that surrounded Moses' birth and what led him to the burning bush for his important meeting with the great I Am is what we see in this last part of the chapter. What was Moses' adult life like? Well, we don't really know a lot about his childhood, but his adult life was pretty troubled. Some believe that maybe he's as young as 25 here, maybe he's as old as 40, but we see that pretty quickly he has a large problem in his life. He wants to go out and to see how the other Israelites live in Egyptian oppression. He seems to have grown up in a pretty comfortable life in Pharaoh's house, and so he's apparently bothered by what he's seen. He goes out, he sees the way the Egyptians are treating the Israelites. He sees an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, and a really interesting statement about that here. It says he looks to his left, and he looks to his right, and he don't see any witnesses, and then he kills the Egyptian. Now, I'm not defending some guy that's beating a slave. This Egyptian is not a good person, from what I have, what little information I have here, but great acts of justice and righteousness usually don't get preceded by looking to the left and looking to the right and to make sure nobody knows about it. I think maybe the writer of Exodus is trying to tell us that Moses' heart is in the right place, but this is not really the way to handle this situation. This is a mistake. And that's how it turns out for Moses right after it. Everybody around Moses condemns him for this action. What he thinks is a way to save someone winds up just kind of messing everything up for him. We don't know the exact nature of the way this Egyptian was behaving, but we do know that this one act doesn't make a difference on the oppression of Moses' people. If that's what Moses is wanting to fix, this isn't the action he needs to take. In fact, his own people don't see him as a hero for this. They see him as a spoiled and reckless fool. He tries to tell two Israelites the next day to stop fighting, and they just turn around on him. And they tell him, "Moses, you're not some leader of Israel. You're a murderer. What are you going to do, kill us too?" Why would you think we wanted to listen to you? Everybody knows who you are. Everyone knows what you have done. Moses' killing of an Egyptian is found out pretty quickly by everyone, despite his looking to the left and looking to the right and hiding a body in the sand. And he has to flee from Egypt to Midian, where he steps up again to defend someone from an oppressor. This time he's standing up for the daughters of Reuel, or Jethro, as is another name we'll see form a little later in the book. And he becomes part of his family. He marries his daughter Zipporah, he has children, and he spends most of his life, till pretty close to 80, far as we know, in the wilderness of Midian. Pharaoh dies during this time. God watches all this. He hears the groan of his people, and he prepares to take a miraculous action to save them. Now, it's funny, when you read this first large part of Moses' life in this chapter, to me at least, it's not very impressive. If I was picking guys to choose as a leader of Israel, I don't really know, for me as a human being, that I'd pick Moses. It sounds like he don't have the best decision-making skills, and he kind of acts off the top of his head. Instead of using his influence or his power to change the fortunes of Israel, he kills this Egyptian, he flees the consequences of that action, and by the time he leaves Egypt, everybody kind of hates him. He's no longer really part of his people, and he's not part of Pharaoh's household anymore. When he meets the daughters of Reuel, they just think he's some Egyptian. The Israelites think he's this brat. The Egyptians think he's a murderer. But there is something pretty admirable about Moses in all this. He does have a heart that wants to help people in need. He went out to the Israelites in the first place. I never caught that before I was reading that this week. He went out to the Israelites to see how they were living, to see that oppression. He cared about people. Even though he was wealthy and seemed to be in a good position, he wanted this injustice he knew was happening to stop. He seems to kill this Egyptian to stop him from hurting somebody else. He tries to break up a fight between two Israelites because he doesn't like seeing them attacking each other. Even in Midian, the first thing he does is try to protect and help these women he don't know. And it's this quality that God seems to value in him so much. Because as a much older and wiser and much more humble man, it's Moses that God's going to call to finally save these Israelites. God gives him a chance to learn from these mistakes and to make this difference in the world that he seems so much to want to make as a young man. You know, injustice is a funny thing. Everybody hates injustice. We hate it when things aren't fair. We hate it when people don't get what they deserve and they get something they don't deserve. God hates it too. This is a major theme of Scripture. God hates it when people are treated with injustice. And yet it's just this critical part of our world. It's everywhere. Our culture is obsessed with injustice. Why do corporations get away with their evil policies? Why does the government get to control so many parts of my life? Why do people die waiting on insurance to work out so they can have a life-changing procedure? I remember when I was working in a grocery store as a teenager, one of the most common forms of injustice I would see when I was working for that minimum wage store was I'd have people come in and they would say to me, "Do you know how much these beans used to cost? I don't know why y'all keep raising the price on these things, but they ain't worth this much money. Y'all need to fix this." And it was so funny to me because this is how we feel about injustice a lot of the time. She's right. You know this lady? Yeah. Those beans really shouldn't be that price. They are going up too fast. That should be changed. And you know what? If there was more justice around, maybe it would be. But who's she talking to about it? I'm a cashier at a grocery store. I can't affect the price of groceries on the shelf. I'm sorry, honey. I wish I could fix it, but I can't. And that's a funny story, but man, think about it. Think about our country. Think about our world. We see things happening we don't like. We see things happening we know ain't right. And who do we go to fix it? We just start attacking each other. This is like the biggest problem in America right now. Everybody sees something they don't like. Nobody likes the coronavirus. And our response to all these things we don't like aren't to go to someone that can fix it or to do something about it. We don't even know what to do about it. We just attack the nearest person we find and yell at them about it, about how they aren't wearing a mask or how they are wearing a mask or how they didn't get the vaccine or how they did get the vaccine. We know there's a problem. We don't know how to fix it. And so we just get mad. And I think one of the things we learn from Moses and his difficult little younger life and these bad decisions that he makes is that it's good to be concerned about injustice. That's a major theme of Exodus. Injustice is a problem. But don't use injustice to fight injustice. And don't just strike out at the first person that you see. God help us to get it right, Gary likes to say. And I think the story of Moses is such a good reminder that God's the only one that knows how to get it right. There is a problem in Egypt. There's a problem in Israel. This is wrong. What is happening? And no one knows how to fix it except God. And God does fix it. He's got a plan. He lifts up Moses, and we're going to see through these next few books that he strikes down Pharaoh, that he strikes down this injustice, that he saves this people, and he changes the whole world. Everyone in the world gets to know who God is from this moment. It's this great introduction of Yahweh to the whole ancient Near Eastern world. We see God's plan with Moses. We see it with Jesus. We see it with Paul. We see it with Peter. God's got a plan for this world. And he's got a plan for his people. And he can help us to make a difference, a real difference. I think that begins with two things. It begins by the way we treat the people around us. You know, Moses, for all his flaws, he cared a lot about everybody he met. He seemed to be trying to help every person that needed help that he came across, even if he didn't know how to do it very well. I think the first thing we need to have is a heart that's willing to help others. I think the second thing we learn from Moses is that along with that heart and that eagerness to help others, we need some wisdom. And some wisdom that only God can give. I think we need to be praying when we're upset about injustice in the world. God, help me to do what's right. God, fix it. Help whatever solution needs to happen to appear. Because I look out at our world and I see injustice, I see problems, I see things that I wish I could get fixed, but I don't know how to fix them. I don't know what the answer is to these problems, I just know the person that can help this world and can help me find ways to contribute to fixing it. You know, tonight, I don't know what your struggle is. Maybe you're sitting there and you're just obsessed with the injustice of it all. I get it. Like I said, this last year, that's all I've seen. Social media, everywhere. Everybody's upset. All upset about this injustice in our world. That's fair. It's a problem. But we don't want to be like Moses was in his younger days and get so obsessed with that injustice that we just start striking out at the people around us. If we want to fix it, let's fix it the right way. Maybe tonight you need the prayers of the church to kind of help repair your own heart. Maybe you're struggling and you need somebody to talk to. You need some help going to God and asking Him to be with this country. Maybe you're struggling personally with your faith. Maybe you're not a Christian. Whatever need you have, I don't know it, but I know the Lord knows it, and we want to help you any way we can tonight. If you got something we can do for you tonight, come forward as we stand and as we sing.